Thursdays at 4 on WHFR. We don't just talk about supporting local music, we're doing it.
Yourself on the Blues Time. It's the greatest blues show anywhere at noon on Thursday. I'm Mr. White, and I'm so confident you will move and groove to the Blues Time. I will give you worry-free home delivery on your FM radio or streaming to you live over the internet. The old blues, the new blues, the finest grease to slide your feet. So get your free Blues Time, the world's greatest blues show on Thursday at noon. Guaranteed.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back live at the National Butt Out Finals. AJ Langer is all fired up. And there he goes. It's out. He put his butt out in 2.6 seconds. Lori is with AJ. Lori?
AJ, how did you get your butt out so quick?
Well, I learned the hard way. I burnt the house down.
If you smoke, put it out. All the way. Every time. Smoking is the number one cause of preventable home fire deaths. Check out usfa.dhs.gov/smoking. A message from the U.S. Fire Administration and firefighters everywhere.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Love to design stuff and play on the internet? Henry Ford Community College offers a one-year certificate program in web technologies and design. Advanced HTML, computer art, web authoring tools, and web multimedia are a few of the courses offered.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
The program is designed to prepare a student to take CIW Certificate Internet Webmaster exams.
For more information on CIW exams, log on to www.ciwcertified.com.
Drop by the HFCC Counseling Office or log on to the web at hfcc.edu.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And today my special guest is Robert Taylor. He is a metaphysician, psychic reader, author of Into the Mystical, TV host and producer of his own cable program called Out of the Ordinary, Into the Extraordinary. A very busy man. Good afternoon, Robert. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mike. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for doing the show. Now, you do many different things. What do you like doing the best?
That would be a hard one to answer, really. I love to communicate, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And probably my favorite thing is to talk about metaphysical subjects. I would say of metaphysical subjects, my favorite would be giving classes about reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I did get a chance to read your book, and I really enjoyed it. Called Into the Mystical, and you covered that quite extensively.
Yes,
reincarnation.
Yeah.
So
yeah, including stories of children who remember their past lives.
Mm-hmm.
And one particular friend of mine has such a son,
mm-hmm.
who he claimed was his brother in the previous life. His brother actually passed away when he was 21 years old,
mm-hmm.
and he got messages, psychically. That the soul in the womb of his wife was his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And as the child was growing up, he began to display definite qualities that his own brother had.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to talk about things that he couldn't possibly have known about in this lifetime from his past life.
Mm-hmm.
Including saying one day, you know what, in my past life, Grandma and Grandpa were my mom and dad. And he talked to, there's an island off of Wales called Barry Island where they had lived, and he said that he had previously lived on Barry Island, that he had this particular bicycle, and all of it was true.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know in the book he also was mechanically inclined, which he was in the former life.
Yeah. Even even my friend said that he got the exact same degree, and said the same thing as his brother once said to him. His brother had all of had his motorbike out on the backyard, or you know, in that life, he said to him, "Wow, how do you do this?" He said, "Oh, it's just common sense." And then I think about the age of 12, his son had his motorbike. You know, his father's motorbike out in pieces, and he remembers saying the same thing to his son, that, how do you do this? He said, it's all common sense, you know. But pretty amazing stuff.
Right. Well, do you think that previous life was interrupted and he had to come back to complete what he was here to learn on the planet Earth?
I think so. And, you know, he died at quite a young age, 21. He died in a motorbike accident. And... you know, what they say in the East is it's like a bank account. You know, you do, you, it's like, you know, say you do about 6%, 10% of the spiritual life, then you, you know, you got that in your account. So you're going to take off where you left off. And they had a phenomenal relationship as brothers. They just did everything together. Even said, you know, shared the same girlfriends and whatever.
All those details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so he came back, and you know, his even in the previous life, my friend was the elder brother, so he was almost like the guru of the of his younger brother, kind of led him along the spiritual path. So now he came back, and he was able to do the same thing for him as his son.
Yeah. Really quite amazing. I mean, I've heard of stories where people have died in battle and then a short time later they come right back to this earth plane to pick up where they left off because something got interrupted. They didn't complete their mission, so to speak, while they were here.
Yeah, there's a great story, not in the book, but there's a great story about this fire chief, and he lived in Pennsylvania, and he was a Civil War buff. And there was a very famous... place was one of the last battles in the Civil War, and he's walking along this pathway, and all of a sudden he feels this terrible, I mean horrendous pain, almost made him faint in his face, and he decided to go and look up the battle at I think it was in Scranton, Pennsylvania. They had you know, they had a lot of literature about this particular battle, and there was a colonel who took part in the battle. He was the leader, I think, on the Yankee side, and he was shot in the face. And from that point on, he would only have his photograph taken, you know, profile. Well, if you were to take the fire chief's face sideways profile, it was exact. So he believed that he was that colonel. Right. And again, he's come back into kind of a warrior life, you know, being the fire chief. That's like being a military, like being a warrior kind of a guy. So there's one little story.
Right. Well, it's true how they follow the same path sometimes from life to life until they learn what it is they have to learn.
Yeah, there's in fact a local friend of mine in Grosse Pointe. You see him walking down the street. He wears military fatigues all the time.
Yeah.
He's a Vietnam vet.
Right.
And same story. He believes he was in the Civil War. He believes he was in the Panzers, German army, fighting in Russia. And but he traced his origin back to Louisiana. Found the exact house, everything. So it's interesting.
Right. Well, I know Patton felt the same way, that he had been a warrior in past lives, starting in Rome and a few other ancient societies, so that he felt that that was his mission in life, was to be a great soldier.
Yeah. And, you know, logically, we bring our talents from one life to the next, First thing to understand, basically, if you accept reincarnation, is that you accept it, you existed prior to this life, because you are a soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are a spiritual being having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's described in the ancient writings of India. We have a physical body. We also have what's called the astral body, which is actually made of mind, intellect, and all of our material concepts we have of ourselves. This is called the astral body. Shirley MacLaine talks about the astral body in her books. And, you know, every time we go to sleep at night, we're going into our astral body. But so when you leave this physical body, you're going to be taking your mind with you, your intellect, all of your talents, because you're going to leave this body in that astral body.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next life, you bring all that, all those experiences into the next life. That's how we explain genius. That's, you know, like Patton was a military
mm-hmm.
genius.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we explain Mozart. You know, how does this little kid compose concertos at the age of four, sonatas? I mean, you know, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also phobias. You know, we can't sometimes, we wonder why we have a phobia about going into the ocean, going up into the air in an airplane. Then, you know, reincarnationists would say, well, perhaps, you know, in the past life you drowned.
Right.
And or you crashed in the airplane.
Right. Or sometimes while you're claustrophobic, anything like that. It might have been stemming from a past life. And I know one of the themes in your book, you mentioned the fact that basically we are all souls and that we incorporate and inhabit bodies. And when it comes right down to it, that's really all we are, but we're just here to learn. And through each reincarnation, we're put in different circumstances so that hopefully we learn something new. It's not always right to be put in the same situation time and again because you won't learn anything.
Exactly. Yeah, they have a nice saying in the East that the most intelligent person learns just by hearing.
Mm-hmm.
The next most intelligent person learns by experience. And the idiot never learns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, I can think of a few of those people on that last category,
yeah.
But I won't mention any names, yeah. But that is interesting.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get interested in metaphysics?
Well, even like I said in the introduction of the book, I think, you know, I definitely came in with that interest because even it would appear maybe accidentally I got to be born in the town in Wales, which is the birthplace of Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Merlin of Arthur and Guinevere and all that.
Right.
And then my parents moved to Wiltshire, which is the site of Avebury, Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
Even the school that I went to. You know, England, everybody knows about ley lines, energy centers.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one running right through my school. So I'm now, my body is now 59. So I grew up in the Beatles times,
mm-hmm.
and the hippie times.
Right.
And so in my late teens, like a lot of kids in that time, we were asking, what's the purpose of life? You know,
mm-hmm.
So that led me to India.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in India, lived as a monk. The nice thing about the Hindu system, you can live for some time without taking a permanent vow.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived for 7 years.
Yeah, without taking that vow?
Without taking the... Well, I was celibate for that time,
mm-hmm.
and then was able then to marry, you know,
yeah,
and have
right.
kids. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the impetus to get out of that, was it?
Well, I came back to the West and decided to start a theater company.
Mm-hmm.
And but we had, you know, ladies in the troupe.
Right.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
It was starting to get a little tough being
yeah.
a monk.
Yeah, it was hard to resist, I know. Well, you're just, like you say, a human being having a spiritual experience.
Or exactly.
Whatever the case
yeah.
may be. Now, what was it like being a monk? I mean, what was it on a daily basis that you did, would you say?
Well, first thing which would really disturb most people, we got up a couple of hours before dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get up around 4 in the morning and bathe and then go into a temple and do different spiritual rituals. And the system I was in, we did a lot of meditation, but on the names of God. Mm-hmm. So people who are familiar with India, or Buddhism also, you've heard of mantras. So we would either recite the mantra verbally or sing with instruments. And then we would study the ancient scriptures, breakfast, and then you'd be doing your daily routine right the way through the day until we do the same thing in the evening again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, bed by 10, and then you're up at 4.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't secluded to a monastery per se. In fact, at one point, I was traveling around Europe also, especially in the UK, arranging speaking engagements for a swami.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually hitchhike in my robes.
Oh, really? And nobody was put off by then?
People would be really shocked. They'd sometimes, practically drive off the road. And,
yeah.
But I had some really interesting stories of, because I would never know actually at nighttime where I'd be even staying.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really depending on God. And somebody would just come up to me and say, hey, you know, you want to stay at my place?
Mm-hmm. And just really briefly, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and today my special guest is Robert Taylor. He's a metaphysician, psychic reader, author, and TV host and producer. Now, when you were, I guess, were you hitchhiking at this point? I mean,
yeah.
Along the road?
Yep.
And you never got into trouble?
No, in those days, especially in England, you know, it was legal, so
mm-hmm. So it was fairly safe.
Yeah, but I had a one guy actually, very interesting story. He was a session musician, a very famous session musician, and played with some of the big names at that time, including George from the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm on the that side road onto the freeway. This guy goes tearing past in a sports car, screeches to a halt, comes back. He says, where you want to go? I said, well, I'm trying to get to Bristol, which was quite a long way. He said, well, I'm only going as far as Slough, which is just outside of London. He said, but I would really, really, really like you to accept my lift, because we need to talk, because I think I dreamt about you last night.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me, he dreamt about being picked up by picking up a monk,
mm-hmm.
In his car, and that the monk had, you know, given him some spiritual knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So I says, oh, Slough, I don't know, you know, I could get stuck. He said, oh, please, you know. So we get to the exit on the freeway. He says, you know what? I'd really like you to meet my wife because, you know, I told the whole dream to my wife. So I said, oh, okay. Took me to his house, had a cup of tea. And then he said, I tell you what, I'm just going to take you all the way to Bristol, which is a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked, and there was an ashram, yoga ashram, where I was going to in Bristol. Gave him a bunch of books, George Harris, one of the George Harrison records, you know. And then he came. He used to come on a frequent basis to the temples and you know, started to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that was neat.
Right. Well, that's different. I mean, I'm sure people don't dream about monks, you know, and picking them up,
yeah,
you know, every night anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was unique for him to do that.
Yeah, he was at that point where he wanted to get some a little bit further in his spiritual path. And
mm-hmm.
And so he said, yeah. And truly, when I met the wife, she was stunned. Because
mm-hmm.
he told her about the dream.
Right. She was shocked when she met you?
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. totally. You know, they were so elated that this thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a premonition.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, don't you feel that dreams can be premonitions at times?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, when we go into the dream state, we're going into the astral body,
mm-hmm.
and we are beyond the time element. So a lot of times, you know, I know my wife Pamela, she's kept a dream journal,
mm-hmm.
and profound things have come up for her, you know, in the dream state.
Right. Well, I know that's some work, too, to keep those journals, so she must have been really sticking to it to do it for so many years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, she's also a spiritualist minister,
mm-hmm.
And so she's very familiar. The spiritualist church is one of the parts of the ceremony. At the end of the service, people get up and give you messages, you know, from mm-hmm. the other side, which she also does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a problem for her to accept, you know, that there's some possibly some premonitions in dreams.
Mm-hmm. And how do you interpret dreams? Aren't they usually of a personal nature, even though sometimes I'm sure people have dreams that might predict world events, but it's basically more of a personal nature usually, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, you know, it's not necessarily things that are coming up in the future. It might also be you in the nighttime working out stuff that you've gone through in the day, you know, mm-hmm. processing it. You know, even Paul McCartney once said he really liked that state between the awake state and the sleep state. You know, that state where you're just between
right.
wakefulness and sleep. They say that is the best time to make your affirmations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that when you make yours?
I try.
Okay. Yeah, you try. Okay, well, that's good. Now, do you meditate on a regular basis?
Yeah, I still do I meditate with mantra. So mm-hmm. I was initiated into different mantras I have a guru.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I try on a daily basis to work with the mantras. The idea of the mantras is that then they're made up of names for God.
Mm-hmm.
And the philosophy is that God being absolute, God is non-different from God's name. So the sound of God's name is as powerful as God.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, a lot of people have heard of Om.
Mm-hmm.
So in the ancient Bhagavad Gita, which means the song of God, 5,000-year-old scripture, God says, of transcendental sounds, I am the syllable Om.
Mm-hmm.
So some people meditate on Om, or you've heard of the Hare Krishna mantra. There are many, many different mantras, and very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So the East, they don't ask you just to believe in something. They say it should be the science of God realization, that you first of all, you hear the philosophy, and if you like the philosophy, then you make an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So you may agree to, you know, do mantras and follow certain spiritual principles, and then there should be a result.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in that way, it's like a scientific process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just some kind of sentimental blind belief.
Right. It's something that could be guided, perhaps?
Yeah, well, and also that, you know, the philosophy is that God is in every atom between the spaces of the atoms. God is with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you take one step to God. God takes 1,000 steps to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I know you mentioned that in your book too. I mean, even when you see blades of grass just blowing in the wind, that's all calculated by God. I mean, He knows exactly how much that grass is going to move, how strong the wind is going to be. There is nothing random in the universe.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you know, for God to be God, God has to be all pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
So God has all knowledge, in fact, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where God says, I know everything that's happened in the past. I know everything that's happening at present. I know everything that will happen in the future. I know all living beings, but me, nobody knows.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true to a certain extent anyway.
Yeah.
So God is in the details?
Yes. And, you know, it's not just a pantheistic philosophy. It's, in fact, the school of philosophy that my guru comes from, it's called simultaneous oneness and difference.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a supreme being, there's a supreme personality of Godhead, and we are like tiny sparks. So we're like an infinitesimal aspect. This material world, this material energy, is all God's energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody becomes God realized, they're seeing the supreme being. They become realized as souls, and also wherever they look, they see God's energy. So there is nothing ultimately but God.
Mm-hmm. Now, does that include other solar systems that are out there that God is in charge of, including life on other planets? yeah. things like that.
That well, of course, and the Vedas again, they were written down 5,000 years ago. They say there are millions of material universes in mm-hmm. God's creation, mm-hmm. where the soul can take birth, and there are 8,400,000 levels of existence.
Wow!
Yeah,
that's a lot.
And there are higher planets than the Earth. We're kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
There are lower planets.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is, I don't know, something to do with hell, perhaps, why that concept came about, where it's lower planets, a harder life, something like that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the penitentiary. You know? Mm-hmm. There are lower planetary places where you can take birth, so... You know, serial killers, Saddam Hussein, whoever, you know.
Hitler.
Stalin.
Yeah, Stalin,
yeah,
yes.
There are lower planets, and there are higher. They can be called heavenly planets.
Mm-hmm.
You get to live for thousands of years in way more subtle types of existence.
Right.
Incredibly more intelligent existence, phenomenal talents.
Right.
But the ultimate goal is to get into the transcendental spiritual world, which, you know, Christians call heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. And what does one have to do to get there?
At the time of death, according to the Vedas, if you're completely God-conscious, if you're absorbed in God, which can mean, again, just remembering God's holy name,
mm-hmm.
You don't come back. So... you know, I've been doing this for a lot of years, and I'm not very far along, you know. So I'm hoping for an honorary degree.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck with that. You know, it might come true.
Yeah.
But yeah, by reading your book, I realized that I thought of myself as being a little more enlightened, but I can see I'm more in tune with the material aspect of life. So hopefully, you progress as you go along. But eventually, if you go to other planets, can your spirits take other forms, perhaps just pure energy, something like that, something that we would not recognize as a human body?
Exactly. Again, if we go back to the astral body,
mm-hmm.
Astral body is made of mind, intellect. So there are beings who exist in just the astral body.
Mm-hmm.
And how about this concept? Somebody who doesn't want a material body, if they die, or they die in a violent death, get stuck
mm-hmm.
on the astral plane, that's what we call a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have desires in the ghostly body. We have a mind, we have an intellect. We don't have the physical senses
mm-hmm.
to enjoy those things. So it's a little bit of a tormented existence.
Mm-hmm. I know in the book you have related stories about working with ghost spirits and trying to rid houses and whatever else that might be infested with these ghosts. What do you do to try to correct that situation?
Well, you really have to, you know, you have to help those beings move along to a nicer, you know, platform.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do when I go in is I again chant the mantras.
Mm-hmm.
You purify the atmosphere, and you tell the, you know, the beings, you know, this is really not the place to be, you know. I had a very interesting, I got a call from a lady, this is years ago, in Sterling Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And she had got the house from the government, who had procured it by repossessing it from a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy was dealing drugs in the basement of the house. That is not a very nice atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But as I walked into the house, it was a really curious place because it was a new house, but it had all this really antique furniture. There was a painting of a woman, very kind of ominous painting as you walked in the door, and she was describing the different rooms. She said, the room down there, the bedroom, is Grandpa's room. He moved in with us. He's over 100, and he just moved in when his third wife just passed away.
Hmm.
So going around the house, There were some nice energies, you know, in the house. She said, yeah, every night I sit down, I'm with the dog, and you can feel this kind of energy going across the room. She said, when we sit down for dinner, the sideboard rattles. So I said, well, tell me this, how did Grandpa get on with his third wife? Oh, she adored him. I said, how did she get on with you? She said, she adored me. I said, did you inherit all of her furniture? She said, I did. So I said, well, I'm going to go down in the basement. I'm going to take care of the drug dealer energy. And then I think you're going to be fine because, you know, the spirit that's hanging out here is you know, Grandpa's third wife.
Mm-hmm.
She likes it here. She wants to be here.
Right. So it's a loving spirit.
A loving spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can tell that. You can tell that, you know, different energies. People talk about, you know, when their father or their mother passes on, they'll even smell cigar smoke or
mm-hmm.
mom's perfume.
Right.
So those energies, obviously, you don't want to get rid of. They're probably there to look after you for a little bit
mm-hmm.
till you get over their passing.
Right. So you should just accept those spirits?
Exactly. You can tell. You know, you can
mm-hmm.
tell. In the book, again, I talk about a couple of experiences of not good
mm-hmm.
entities.
Right. Well, you actually said that, in essence, you were attacked a couple of different times.
Yeah, yeah. One place I used to manage, it was north of London. It was a beautiful spiritual retreat. It used to be owned by Lord Piggott. And George Harrison purchased the place from the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And but from the moment we walked in that place, you know, doors would slam behind you. One monk was meditating in what used to be the theater room, and he heard these two little children's voices singing in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
We are the children that died in the lake. So I talked to our next door neighbor, and she said, indeed, there were two kids got into the property.
Mm-hmm.
They drowned in the lake. And she was quite a funny old lady. She used to work for the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a great lady, very liberal, so she enjoyed having the monks next door.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, yeah, they used to live in my house. They were doing terrible things, poltergeists, knocking over, you know. So she told them, if you behave, you can stay. If not, you'll have to go. She said, well, it sounds like they've moved back into the manor. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, that did happen.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Now, you've also made reference to the Beatles. And you actually knew George Harrison to a certain extent?
Yeah, in the background. I used to assist a couple of monks who were his main contacts.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of times I got to go to George's house and, you know, and meet him. And
right,
yeah.
But it's not like you really hung out or anything
like
that.
Yeah, I would have liked that.
He
was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, again, as far as well-known celebrities, he was very spiritual, I believe.
Yeah, especially to the end of his life, when he was diagnosed with cancer, he really mm-hmm. got into absorbing himself in God. And one of those monks I mentioned, actually, they flew him all the way in from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
He passed. I think it was in the States, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he came to help him in his transition,
mm-hmm.
but. Both these guys, they were originally from the States. One of them was really George's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was remarkable to see him at the end of his life. He was in a very exalted state.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of faith, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the process.
Mm-hmm. And you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. My name is Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Robert Taylor. He's a metaphysician, psychic reader, author, TV host, and producer. Now, how did you end up getting to the United States? If you grew up in England and went to India for a while, how did you get here?
Well, used to do MC festivals, spiritual festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Used to do quite a lot of the English rock festivals.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And so...
were you still a monk when you did this, or not necessarily?
In transition.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I started this theater company, and we used to try to, you know, it had a purpose. We were trying to get over some spiritual, philosophical concepts using theater and comedy. So we did kind of Monty Python type stuff. And so we traveled. We had a bus and even a shower and a kitchen on the bus. And so one guy from the States saw me do the MC work, and he invited me to come to L.A., where they have it's a great festival every year on Venice Beach. And it's an Indian spiritual festival. They have back then they had, I remember one year they had Alaraka, who was Ravi Shankar's tabla player, and all these famous Indian singers. So anyway, they liked what I did. They invited me back the next year. And then somebody from a TV studio who does documentaries, metaphysical documentaries, invited me to do a show. Did the show, and then maybe about 2 years later, he called me out of the blue, and he said, I got a year's worth of work at the studio, and by that point, you should be able to get your green card. Didn't get the green card. Oh. And so those delightful immigration people, you know, told me I had to go. And but somebody sponsored me to come to Michigan. So that's how I ended up.
Here in Michigan?
In Michigan, yes. Metro Detroit.
Right. Well, I guess there are worse places, but usually it just seems to me that if people are coming to the States, they want to go to someplace warm and, you know, Miami, L.A., maybe Honolulu, something like that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You ended up
yeah.
here, so.
Well, you know, growing up in those 60s, us English kids, we love the blues, we love Motown, soul.
Right.
So many of my heroes were, you know, from Motown.
Yeah.
Marvin Gaye and the Temptations. And
right.
So, of course, one of the first things I did when I got here was visit Hitsville, USA.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you went down to the museum.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. I was talking to somebody today, how amazing that if you go into the actual recording studio and you see the size of it, the sound that came out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Truly phenomenal.
Right. I've been there. They even have the candy machines from back then with, you know, little mock-ups of, you know, the candy that was in the machines at that time.
Wow.
It was really quite amazing, you know, and simple recordings, but nevertheless, great music.
Music, yeah. I think one of the things we loved in England about the Afro-American musicians was that they were, we really felt they were very authentic. They were coming from the soul, you know?
Right.
These people were really authentic, and I've got documentaries at home. In fact, it's called the Soul Package Tour. Otis Redding, Sam and Dave. I got to see that tour. I was about 14.
Really?
And they just couldn't believe the English kids just went absolutely wild. They wouldn't let them off the stage, you know. So
right.
Sam and Dave would come out, you know, do an encore. Then Otis Redding would want to top Sam and Dave, you know.
Right, a great show. Everybody wanted to outdo the other, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So we all wanted to be like these black guys, you know. We all thought they were like, yeah, this is cool.
Right. Well, I see the movie The Commitments. You know, it was along those same lines, was it? If you saw that film,
yeah, that was great.
Yeah, yeah. Where the Irish kids want to emulate the black music and play that type of music. I really love that kind of music as well. So
yeah, yeah. My favorite probably is the blues. I love the blues.
Well. I have a blues show also on the station. We won't get into
that. Wow. Okay. All right.
But yeah, I like the blues. I like up-tempo music, something you could dance to. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
And now I DJ too. So, you know, 23 years I've been.
Now you just DJ parties or on the air or what?
Mostly now I do it, you know, have my own little DJ company and do weddings and.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
All the celebrations,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, do you use the computer and all that? I mean...
Well, I'm not that far advanced.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I ever will be, unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the thought of having to transfer all those the CDs onto the computer, you know, would is a bit, you know, a little bit daunting.
So. Right. Well, I think that's interesting that, you know, you say you're 59, I'm 55. You kind of get to the point where you don't really want to go any further in technology, you know, and I know many years ago as a young man, I used to, you know, kiddingly chide my mother because she reached that same point, And now, years later, I find myself reaching the same point. You just don't want to progress with technology. You
yeah.
know, you're good where you're at.
Well, a good example is my four-year-old grandson, who's just absolutely out of the realm playing these video games, and mm-hmm. he wants me to play along. It's just not possible.
You're lost, right?
Yeah.
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 It's a whole new world sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. Now, when do you work with actual clients? Do you actually give readings to people?
Yeah. In fact, we kind of joke, my wife and I, you get a twofer, you know.
Oh, really?
If you come to our house.
Really? Tag team them?
Yeah. we both do different things. Pamela's actually a spiritualist minister.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a psychic medium. Very, very good. The other thing she's really, really good at is she's a very accomplished astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
So she can do your whole chart, astrological chart. In astrology, you can get what's called your solar return, which is, you know, what's happening for that birthday year,
mm-hmm.
and your progress chart, where you're at in your life, and then also, you know, your birth chart. She also is quite accomplished at the Tarot.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in India, this is a really interesting thing, I got to hear of what's called the Bhrigu Samhita. It literally means the Song of Bhrigu. Of all the great Hindu sages and saints, Bhrigu was considered to be the greatest. And he was given an extraordinary gift by God that he could sing the destiny of any soul in the creation. So then I found out from the Vedic scriptures that there are libraries around India. You go to the library, either they'll do your astrological chart, you need your exact birth time,
mm-hmm.
or just by using your thumbprint and the first initial of your name. If you're a guy, they take the right thumbprint. If you're a lady, they take the left thumbprint, because that's the masculine and feminine side.
Okay.
They usually tell you come back in a few hours or a couple of days. If you're lucky, when you come back, there's a specially initiated priest coming in the line of Bhrigu, and he's sitting there with these thin strips of palm wood. They're all strung together, and you take a close look. They have this very small Sanskrit writing, and they'll proceed to tell you, without you giving them any details, your name is, your mother's name is, your father's name is, your father's occupation is. In my case, they said, you have no sisters, you have one brother, he's mentally handicapped. And they go right through your life.
Mm-hmm. And all that was true that they told you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I had it done not with the thumbprint, but with the chart.
Mm-hmm.
So the priest said, I've been waiting for you. He said, according to your astrological chart, he said, I'm going to ask you some questions. If so, I'm going to initiate you into another technique from that sage Bhrigu. So it's called the Bhrigu Yantra. It's an astrological oracle, and I'm supposed to be working with Bhrigu when I use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I would, if you were to come to me, I would give you the flavor of your next 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have any special questions about any areas of your life, we use that. I also do the astrology, but a lot of people know me for the palm.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it's viewed in the East, the astrological chart, the palm, even I know you've had Lynn Klassen on the show. She's mm-hmm. a face reader.
Yes.
The way they see all these things is that they're like maps of your karma.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not born in the universe by chance at a certain place, time, to a certain set of parents, even if you're premature,
mm-hmm.
Cesarean.
Mm-hmm.
That moment when you took your birth is exactly when you were supposed to come in. So by looking at the macrocosm at the time of the birth, by looking at where the planets are, where they are by sign, by house, there's 12 houses,
mm-hmm.
you're like a microcosmic replica. So that literally is a map of your karma.
Right.
And then a way an astrologer can make predictions is by looking at what those planets are doing to you in terms of your astrological chart
mm-hmm.
right now. So you might be going through a really good Jupiter transit, life is sweet, getting some nice karma,
uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Or you could be going through a Saturn transit and, you know, life's uphill and you just don't know what's going on.
Right. But I know you also grouped numerology in there with palm reading and astrology as being able to foretell what you're going through or what you might go through. So they all work together?
Yeah. All these sciences, actually, we don't boo-hoo any of them. They're all oracles. You know, in China, they had their I Ching. Mm-hmm. So many people who are very good at the I Ching just said it's absolutely mind-boggling, you know. So same with numerology. Everybody's birth date has a certain vibration. Mm-hmm. And the name of the person, you know, has a vibration. And even physics, we know now that everything is vibration. Mm-hmm. And the great ancients were all attuned to all this stuff. Unfortunately, what's happened with our secular world, they've separated the mystic from the scientific. But it's at one point it was all, you know, the astronomer was the astrologer, mm-hmm. and the mathematician was the numerologist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just once again, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The name of this show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm Mike Holloway. My guest today is Robert Taylor. He's a metaphysician, psychic reader, author, TV host, and producer. Now, something that you touched upon a few minutes ago, that there seems to be no accidents in life, that you choose your birth parents, your exact situation, everything like that. And I've asked this of other guests that I've had on the show. What would you tell somebody that has gone through a traumatic event? Mm-hmm. Whether they become a quadriplegic, mm-hmm. or a serious fire and they're disfigured now. Now, a person like that would say, no, there is accidents in life because, yep. I wasn't supposed to be like this. I was supposed to be, quote, normal. Mm-hmm. What do you tell people that are in that situation?
Well, you know, that's something you really have to contemplate. And the only thing really my own guru used to say is that karma is a labyrinth. It's a labyrinth. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell somebody who's born blind or, you know, who has some heavy infirmity, and in a very callous way, oh, that's your karma.
Right.
You know, we don't really have the gift to really point that out. But I have been present with somebody who, in fact, I became kind of a student for a while, who did the Bhrigu. Mm-hmm. And without knowing anything about these people, he was able to show, you have this particular situation in this life because of something you've perpetrated previously. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. It's a beautiful story. I was allowed to sit in. He did it with the astrology. He was a Bhrigu reader with the astrology. And this one woman from West Bloomfield came to him, and she had Jupiter, which is the planet of good fortune, it's the planet of good karma, in the second house, in his own sign of Sagittarius, which not only rules finances, but also in the Hindu astrology rules speech. Mm-hmm. He said, you have the silver tongue. And without being told any details about the woman, he said, you've made your money in a very unusual way for a woman. You've made your money by selling steel. She says, oh my God, did anybody tell you? He said, no, it's all written down here. Mm-hmm. She said, you're correct. He said, and you've worked for 5 different companies, major corporations. You did very well in those corporations, and for no reason the CEO let you go each time. 5. She counted on her hand. She said, you're exactly right. He said, the reason being, in the previous life, those 5 CEOs worked for you, mm-hmm. and you let them go unjustly.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they knew it consciously or not. So, you know, in my case, interestingly, I grew up with my brother in that state. You know, his brain was damaged at birth, forceps birth. Mm-hmm. And so from an early age, I saw suffering. Mm-hmm. And I also, it's very hard, for instance, to talk to a Jewish person about the Holocaust.
Right.
The only thing that really, helped me get through my life is really to accept the philosophy of reincarnation and karma.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not a, how do we say, it also, in the future lives, we can, in this very lifetime, transcend all karma.
Mm-hmm.
By coming to this state of self-realization, God-realization. Somebody who's completely God-realized, they no longer have to accept the same karmic circumstances as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. So do you think would help to explain what karma is to people that are suffering from certain diseases or something like that? That it might help?
Well, yeah, what I would say is, ultimately we've got to get out of the bodily concept of life.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we're in this bodily concept of life. So we think we're American, we're English, we're white, we're black.
Right.
We're male, we're female, we're thin, we're fat, when in actuality we're not this material body.
Mm-hmm.
Teilhard de Chardin, the great Jesuit philosopher, once said, "I'm not a human being having a spiritual experience, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience."
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little difficult for the scientist, because it is said consciousness and the soul are transcendental, spiritual. They are not material. Consciousness is not a product of matter.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem is we are a spiritual atom as a soul. Actually, the self is inconceivable. We're immutable. We're immeasurable. We're eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So my own guru used to say, get back to the bodily point, there's only one problem on the planet. We're all suffering from skin disease.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're this material body. So we think black, white, male, female. Where are all the problems coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Is this duality. So somebody who's become self-realized, God-realized, they're seeing, wherever they look, wherever they see life, not just in the human body, but the Vedas say even in the body of germs, insects, grass, trees, animals, there is a soul.
Mm-hmm.
And not only there is an individual soul, the supreme soul
right.
is in every atom, between the spaces of the atoms. So when we come to that realization, then we get beyond the body.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes people who are in humble circumstances, just like the Bible says, it's more difficult for a wealthy man to get to heaven than the camel through the eye of the needle.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are living in humble and maybe challenged circumstances, they can take that negative circumstances and turn that to a positive spiritually.
Mm-hmm. So it might progress them even more to go through something like that for the next lifetime?
Sorry, what's that again?
It might progress them. I mean, they might learn more because they've had such a traumatic life that it might progress them further and faster to better lives in the future?
Yeah, even philosophically in this lifetime. My teacher used to say spiritual life begins when you realize this material world is a place of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That this planet is not the all and the be all and the end
right.
all in existence.
Right.
Just like we know in Haiti, already in a huge mess, and now this horrendous earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So it is said in the Vedas there are three types of suffering that the soul goes through while we're in this material body. We have suffering caused by disease or anxiety of the mind. We have misery caused by other living beings. We all know about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the girlfriend quits you.
Yeah.
You get bitten by the mosquito
right.
in the summer. And then we have misery caused by the natural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So the philosopher is somebody who looks at the material world and says, hey, man, this is not a great deal. For a little bit of pleasure, I'm having to go through a lot of trouble.
Right.
So that's when spiritual life begins.
Mm-hmm.
So Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, out of many thousands of people, only one will get on that path. And then out of those, only a few really, you know, get to come to that great realization, you know, mm-hmm. the ultimate.
Right.
So it's quite a path.
Yes, it is.
And we are eternal. And if you don't make it this life and you've only done 1%, then you start at 2%. Mm-hmm. It's a much nicer philosophy than if you don't bathe in the blood, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah, right. Well, we don't want that necessarily. Yeah. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how could they do so? I know you have some classes and a few other things coming up.
Yeah, on a regular basis, we do classes in the community ed.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up, actually...
And right, this is in Dearborn, right?
This is Dearborn, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, we do them in Dearborn, St. Clair Shores, Grosse Pointe, Birmingham, Rochester, Lake Orion, you know.
Well, you're staying busy, that's
yeah.
good.
But as far as Dearborn goes, January the 27th,
okay.
I'm going to be giving a class at Dearborn High. It's from 7 to 9 on reincarnation. And then... I'm looking at a book here, so the February the 3rd, my wife Pamela will be giving a class, what is it called? 2010
your year ahead.
Yes.
2010 your year ahead. And the next week we'll both or one of us will be giving a class called Psychic Potpourri. So we give a talk and then you get to experience different psychic techniques. And then on the 24th of February, so those, that's the 3rd, the 10th of February, then the 24th, Pamela's going to be back giving a class called Meditations and Messages.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to learn about meditation, and then she also gives messages from mm-hmm. the psychic plane.
And in case you couldn't tell, Pamela's been a very quiet audience in here, and she's just wanted to clarify the situation, so that's why you heard her voice. Now, how do you get in touch with you? Do you have a website or anything
Thank you.
Like that? You want to mention your book, your television
yes.
show?
We do have a website. Also, we give personal readings right out of our home. We're in Grosse Pointe. So we're not that far, you know, if you're living in the Dearborn area.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, you can get a twofer if you come, you know, you can spend 15 minutes with me, 15 minutes with Pamela. We can be reached at 313-640-5792. That's the home number, 313-640-5792. And my cell phone is 313-682-1569. We're also on the web.
Mm-hmm. Gotta be nowadays.
yeah, we've got a little website. It's called Mystic at intothemystical.com. No? Oh, that's the email. The website is www.intothemystical.com. www.intothemystical.com. You can also get the book if you go to amazon.com, and we're trying to get on PayPal, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's one step at a time, right?
Yeah, I tell you. Oh, my gosh.
Right. So, in closing, what would you like people to know? How can we get closer to being more godlike?
Well, we always say, as I mentioned earlier, that it's not just some kind of... You don't want just some kind of blind belief. And that's what we say is happening in today, whether it's Islamic fundamentalism or Christian fundamentalism. That belief that's just based on sentiment becomes fanaticism. So you need a system where there's philosophy, and you need some spiritual practices that give you actual realization.
Mm-hmm.
So look for that, and everybody's where they're really supposed to be. You know, I had a great reverend from Renaissance Unity,
yes,
on our show.
Marianne Williamson?
Marianne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then Greg Barrett. He's not
okay.
there anymore.
All right.
But Greg did say, and I liked it, that everybody's in the place where they're supposed to be. Somebody wants to go to the Unitarian Church. Somebody wants to go to the Baptist Church. I would say, if you think you've got the only way, all right, but at least let everybody else practice what they want to practice. And
right.
then we'd have a lot more, you know, peaceful world.
Right. Well, everybody's here to learn their own lesson, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And real quickly, what is the peace formula?
The peace formula, In the 500 years ago, one of the how long have I got? Have I got very long?
Oh, you got a couple minutes.
Okay, so one of the unique things about the Hindu system is they have what is called the concept of avatar. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows about the movie.
Yes.
So avatar means the divine descending into the world. So Lord Buddha is an avatar. Lord Jesus is an avatar. 500 years ago, Lord Krishna reappeared on the earth as Lord Chaitanya, and he delivered what the yogis and the sages of India considered to be the formula for spiritual realization in our very difficult age, and that is the chanting of the holy names of God. It doesn't matter what name. The Muslim will say Allahu Akbar, the Christian will say Hallelujah, and Lord Chaitanya was... he gave the Hare Krishna mantra. My spiritual master said, this is the peace formula. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So by chanting the holy names of God, by hearing the name, one will purify one's consciousness, come to the level of self and God realization. And he said if the world would do that, then we would see each other as the same, all parts and parcel of God. We would treat each other with great respect, and we would have love on the planet. Mm-hmm. I believe all you need is love.
That's right. Thank you, Robert, very much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's such a joy. Thank you.
Thanks. I would just like to thank my guest, Robert Taylor, for doing this show. I really appreciate it. Very interesting guest. And, again, I really enjoyed reading his book, which was called Into the Mystical. And, again, a very interesting guest. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay. He's helped me out quite a bit on this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Be sure to come back next month. On Tuesday, February 16th, we'll be back with another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Until then, I just want to say thank you for listening and have a great day.
This is Aaron from Under Oath, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM on your dial, and WHFR.FM online.
WHFR.FM, the station making waves. It's Tuesday. It's 2 p.m. That means, yes, you are tuned into the right place for indie rock and pop. This is One Chord to Another. I'm your host, Jeff, and I will be bringing you lots of new and slightly used indie rock and pop to get you through your afternoon. Hope you've had a great week, and thank you so much for joining.